welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are freezing our bits off in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it would be fair to say that it hasn't been a vintage week here on Planet Albion. First, on Saturday, cup fever turned into more of a headache as we huffed and we puffed, but we couldn't quite blow down West Brom's house. Now, we have to do it all again on Wednesday as we have our first live game on the BBC since 1983. Then on Tuesday, we saw a complete and utter capitulation at Craven Cottage where, despite leading 2-0 at half-time, we conceded 4 second-half goals and went down to our heaviest defeat of the season. Today, we have the chance to get back on track as Watford visit the Amex. Our performance at Vicarage Road on the opening day can only be described as abject, so let's hope for better this time out. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we welcome back Simon Levinson. Andy Bass is here as well, and we also hear from the Watford fan show host, Andy Lewis. So, hello everyone.
Hello.
A little bit flat after that week.
We're also a little bit cold as well. Don't get me wrong, we're in a lovely snug studio and everything's fine. It's just knowing full well that in about an hour's time, we're going to have to brave the cold again.
We are
Piers Morgan's best friends. We are snowflakes.
And there was a tumbleweed blowing
across
the room.
There was lots of snowflakes going into his face. Anyway, how are you, AD? Have you cheered up from Tuesday?
I was just kind of like, what? I couldn't quite work out what I was seeing. But, I mean, it was...
Well, in that case, Andy, I mean, we'll talk about it in depth. You were there, so not only did you have to watch that abject misery, you did it in the cold, having spent money to get there. In a nutshell, without swearing and getting reverb off the air, how did you feel about Tuesday?
I was really annoyed.
Good, right.
Quite frankly, it was, we'll get to it later, but I cannot recall seeing such a clueless second-half performance in a very long time.
I sadly had to met up with Andy on the train and was regaled with the splendour of the evening's performance.
Yeah, you got the full
version.
But Levo, welcome back. It's been a while since your last confession,
years,
isn't it?
Yes.
Was it really? I think last time you were on, you were actually advertising your latest musical, the Southern Fail one, the one of Angela Merkel. Zooming around Europe.
Is it that long ago?
Yeah.
Because that was the first one, and Southern Fail went down reasonably well with audiences in Brighton. I think that was
a very good show. It was a very good show. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, the point is that seeing as it's actually, and we don't actually delve into politics too much, but let's face it, this is something that's so ludicrous. I mean, it's something that can actually be sort of just kept going until such time as, well, someone sorts out the railways, your Southern Fail show.
Yeah, I think it's not all Southern. It's
now national, don't it? Absolutely.
It's Network Rail as well. Ultimately, it is Chris Grayling.
Yes.
Yeah. Our man of the people.
So quite frankly, you go steaming in.
Steaming in.
Off the rails.
Steaming it. Oh, boom in details.
But anyway, get back on track.
Well, let's talk about a game that we didn't lose, firstly. And that was the FA Cup game on Saturday where West Brom came and paid us a visit. Now, we're at the game.
Yes.
I watched the highlights.
That's the best review of a game I've ever heard.
I know.
Sounds like you're on the toilet.
Thanks for that.
Not at all.
But it was. I mean, then watched the highlights again, and it was like a completely different game from the one I because I came out of there feeling quite flat.
Well, let's have your team news first.
It was all changed then. And there was a debut for Dan Burn. Starts for Kyle Andoni, Knockout, Basuma, and Bruno. Jason Steele was injured in the warm up, so Button got another start.
Well, the first things first is that I think is there anyone who's listening to this that actually sat in their regular seat? It's just one of the things I do love about the FA Cup, and we're still in a new stadium, and it's still only, what, 8 years old, nearly 8 years old, is that we're all still trying, you know, looking at watching cup games in a different place to your regular seat from your league game. So where are you normally, Levo?
I'm normally in West Stand Upper. I was East Stand Upper, and I have to say the atmosphere was a little bit flat. The performance was good, I thought. Just that final third. And I love the FA Cup, and I really thought this is a big, big opportunity for the Albion to uh, to make progress in the competition.
Well, it still is.
We're still in there, yeah.
We were in the hat, as it were. So I mean, it was. But I mean, the performance. I mean, we played very, very well. And like you said, there was a lot of effort. I mean, myself and Andy were discussing our quest to find the world's greatest football shirt after the game, and then we came.
I thought
across,
you were going to look, looking for the best tinfoil FA Cup.
Well, there is that as well.
Okay, go on. Sorry,
but there's a well-known energy drink that that sponsored one particular shirt we were looking at, and that was basically. Our summary of the game, whereas there was a lot of energy but no end product.
I think that would sum it up. Yeah. And we never really created that full on chance to put them to bed, because I thought the team that the Albion picked was going to win that 3-0. I really was. I was absolutely confident of victory there. But hey ho, that's football, as they say.
Go on, Andy.
Yeah, it was a weird game because, yeah, okay, you're disappointed and whatnot. Although, you know, seeing how the rest of the round went, actually drawing, you know, staying in the hat, didn't seem like too bad a result in the end.
Absolutely.
But it was a weird game because I thought it would be closer in terms of like the two teams. I thought we'd be a bit more evenly matched, but I actually thought we were. By far and away the better team.
Yep.
I mean, as it turns out, it does appear that they were playing like they're under 16s or whatever, which would explain why we looked a lot stronger, a lot more physical, especially in the midfield where we kept winning the second balls and getting those little tackles in, so we were able to bring the ball forward. But it was really just the final ball or the final shot just let down like what had been going on in the other two-thirds of the pitch, because I actually thought, couldn't fault the endeavour. I thought we really wanted to win. We really went for it. We created plenty of chances, but we just lacked the cutting edge. Yeah.
But you compare an 11 v 11, I mean, the 11 that Chris put out was, we can see it's a very strong side. Now, it's interesting the point you make about, you know, basically they put out a team, half the team was kids. Now, if that's West Brom's second 11, even if it's their third 11, we'd have to go quite a way down our pecking order in order to put out an equivalent team, you know, go sort of raiding the under-23 side, who incidentally had a game against Bayern Munich in the week. So there's no way that, you know, too many of them were going to join the first team, even if we did actually, sort of, you know, have that many kids in the squad. So, you know, the second 11 that we put out, as we're all saying here, was certainly strong enough and good enough. And Levo saying we could have won three, should have won 3-0. It was probably certainly strong enough to do so. But as so many, everyone is saying, strong, very strong defensively. Yeah, they had a couple of chances, but you know, to expect that. I mean, it's not as though they're rubbish. They were Premier League last season. I thought we won the midfield battle. We closed them down very well. It's just the three up front of Andoni and Knockaert and Lacardia. It was almost as if they'd never played together before. They were either A, trying to walk it in, or B, just, you know, the choices at the wrong moments meant that chances were few and far between.
It was very similar to the Arsenal game the night before. Well, but Arsenal in general, actually, Levo, where we were so busy trying to score the perfect goal, we forgot to kick the football in the goal.
Well, that's been Arsenal over the years, hasn't it? Trying to score the perfect goal. But I think everyone was trying too hard up front eventually, because the frustration kicked in. 15, 20 minutes to go. It was apparent that we weren't going to score.
Yeah.
I think everyone had settled for that.
It's either that it was going to be a moody sort of like, you know, flick off someone's backside or a penalty or a, you know, a dodgy handball or a, you know, an own goal off, you know, a Hinshelwood type own goal. It was going to be something like that, and it just wasn't happening.
Well, there was some genuine moments of quality in the game, and most of them
came from Gyökeres, frankly, and the substitute.
It was another good game for Yves Bissouma.
Yep. Yes, he is the one that could actually sort of drive things forward. But even then, as much as we have that with Bissouma, and we have it with Knockaert, they can actually run that 20, 30 yards, you know, to drive everyone forward from there on in. And I think it's not just in the cup game. We've seen it in so many other games. It's the decision making at a given moment. Do they cross it? Do they pass it? Do they, you know, whichever it is. And even if they do make the right choice, can they get the right quality in? You know, some of the crosses coming in were either under hit or over hit. You know,
there was certainly a case of lack of concentration on one particular thing where Bruno put it on an absolute plate for Andoni to fire it home, and he ended up on his backside.
It was an air shot. I mean, I didn't mean to make contact with the ball at all.
All you're waiting for then is the Benny Hill theme tune, aren't you?
It was, I mean, at that moment on, you just know you're not going to score. And then when Stevens strikes the upright as well, with like that.
Which reminds me.
Good save.
It was a good save. Well, Jonathan Bond was, he had a very, very good game. He did make some great saves.
What did you keep saying to me, actually, Andy, during the game about shooting? Do you remember? You said, whatever happens, don't let Stevens have the ball to shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened?
Well, he had his one good shot for the for season. Yep. Even the ooh moment he had on Tuesday.
Apart from the shot against West Ham, of course, which actually nestled quite nice in the back of the net.
Exception that proves the rule.
Yes. But, you know, the keeper had, he did have a very good game. He made saves that you realised, you thought that he should have made anyway. Mm.
There are a couple where he sort of pushed the ball out and we just didn't have anybody in there to sort of pop home the rebound. It was just it was really, because it wasn't all bad.
No.
It was just bad in the crucial area.
To be honest, the worst part about it really was the score. You know, I mean, the performance was good. Like you said, there was plenty of industry, plenty of endeavour. It was just the score.
Yeah.
What interested me was, like, as we got towards the end of the game, it looked like West Brom were actually quite happy to take away the game for a replay, which thought, given their, given how many games you have to play in the Championship, which is, as we know, is like loads.
It's grueling, yeah.
And they are right up there. I thought it was interesting. That does make me slightly nervous for the replay because, I think they're going to be up for it, and I don't think he might put out a better team. But there's nothing to fear there. I mean, I was really surprised at how positively we went at the game, which was great. I liked the attitude. I liked the endeavour. It's just that the quality didn't live up to those levels.
Go on, Levo.
I mean, that's a good reserve team we put out.
Yeah.
There's not one member of that team that started on Saturday that hasn't played at least three Premier League games. Actually, apart from Dan Burns, because he's making his debut. But, I mean, he's been
playing.
He was
very good.
Yeah. And given that the draw, how it's panned out and results, at the end of the next round, there will be a maximum of two so-called big super clubs.
Two of the big six.
Two of the big six will be left. That's it. And it's an opportunity for any team to get to a cup final, or certainly to a semi-final.
Sure.
And I would be very disappointed if we didn't go for it. Having said that, against Watford, we need to get the points.
Absolutely.
Because Premier League survival, I'm probably in a minority. I'd rather see us get to the cup final. And I know I'm in a minority. But Premier League survival is what Chris Hughton will be going for.
Yes.
And 3 points against Watford takes the pressure off a little bit, possibly puts us 10, 11 points clear of the bottom three, and maybe then he can look at it and say, actually, we've got a good home draw.
So basically what you're saying is that the result on today, that dictates what side he puts out on Wednesday.
I think it might do.
I think, but having said that, the amount of changes that he made for the Cup game, I think that should be the 11 that starts anyway. That is an 11 that's good enough to beat West Brom. Now, West Brom might put out a stronger side. They might not, but they might put out a stronger side. But that is still enough, I think, for them to get through. And there's not, although you said they're kind of regulars or semi-regulars, but there's only a couple of them that are going to be, because, all right, we've got this Tuesday, Saturday, which, like I say, this extra Tuesday they could have done without, or Wednesday they could have done without. But bearing in mind that, Knockhart isn't always a starter. Burn isn't always a starter. Bruno isn't. Hopefully Bernardo will be back soon anyway. So he may well play on Tuesday. But if we don't do well against Watford, then I think it's not so much what we do against Watford. It's more looking forward to the Burnley game after that. That's going to more sort of worry about whether, what team Chris puts out.
Well, one omission from the West Brom matchday squad was, of course, Gaten Bong, which we're not going to go into the details of, but, I mean, the other perpetrator was left out of that squad as well. Whether that's going to happen in the second, I was going to say second leg then, in the replay. I've got all Ashley Barnes.
If Bernardo's ready and back, then I prefer to see him play anyway, and that's that. It was interesting having Montoya at left back anyway.
I thought it did perfectly well. So, I mean, what sort of side do you think we will see then? I mean, will we see
the same?
More or less the same. It will be a good side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might have to correct me on what the rules on the FA Cup competition is here. But, I mean, looking through the list of deadline day signings, there was an awful lot of players that West Brom have actually picked up yesterday. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, if they haven't played in the first game, they can't. If they weren't signed by the time you played the first game, they can't play in the replay. Is that correct?
I think they're perfectly eligible to play, so long as they haven't played for someone else. I mean, I was concerned that Dan Burner played for Wigan already, but evidently not. I'm pretty certain you can play. You know, it's not as though it's the same game. It is a replay. You know, it's not. If the game was postponed halfway through or abandoned halfway through, there might be a consideration. I'm not sure, but this is actually a separate game.
Okay. Well, it's our first game on Wednesday night. It's going to be live on terrestrial television for the first time since on the BBC. For instance,
is that really the case since '83?
Since live on the BBC, yes.
Wow.
We've been live on ITV, I believe. I think there was a game against Bournemouth a few years ago.
There was a game against Liverpool following after the cup
final.
That
was ITV as well.
That was ITV.
But,
yeah.
I mean, it was the first time on Auntie Beeb.
Did you look that up, or did someone point that out to you?
No, it's just a fact.
Well, no, because when you said, I thought. Really?
Yeah.
He just knows everything.
Well, we've never got to know in the FA Cup that often. So when
even against Man U, I mean, he must have had a game against Man U on the telly.
Not in the FA Cup.
Did we play the? Hang on, who did we? We played Man U in the cup last year, and that game was live on the box, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that was not on.
Was that on the BBC? Good stat, mate. Well played.
That was on BT Sport.
Talking of Manchester United.
Oh, yeah.
Did I read a story somewhere that Gaetan Bong was attracting their interest?
I think there's an awful lot of trolling been going on this month, isn't there? We're going to talk about the January window presently.
I think that's a story from the Treason Show.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are delighted to be brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. I believe it's 98,000 shirts on there.
98,150 as of yesterday.
And this is one of them. I'm going to give this to Andy, and this is a thing of wonder.
Okay. Well, seeing as everyone can see it on the radio, Andy, fire away. What have we got?
Wow. Okay, we basically have got some purple flock wallpaper.
I was going to say, it looks a bit like Anaglypta, doesn't it?
It's come from the local Indian restaurant.
As
advertised.
It's Iraya.
Yeah.
It is.
Bill choosing an Iraya shirt. Who knew?
It is a purple shirt with a rather psychedelic
kind of watermark
geometric pattern on it. There's a curious...
Lever, did you wear that shirt in the 60s, mate?
There's a curious sort of insignia thing on one of the sleeves, black and white shapes.
Yeah.
And then with a really rather nasty little yellow collar featuring two purple dotted lines. And then what appears to be...
Above and beyond that, not a clue.
Sort of a flower with a castle in it as the badge.
Well, I'm looking at it. The yellow collar, it's not as good as nasty. I'm thinking it's Middle Eastern.
Well, it's not Middle Eastern. That's
it's just because what it is that the advertiser, is that Zidan or...
Zidan Gregor? Is this going to be like Turkey or...?
Yeah, I mean, it's... It's certainly. I reckon it's Mediterranean, but that could be anywhere between Spain, Morocco, and Syria, and so.
Well, this is what Phil says, and you're wrong. Your shirt of the week this week is this beauty. I thought it was all blue until I found out the team's nickname. Phil's colourblind, for those who didn't know. Yeah. It is the Vijoli Kasti, which is Slovenian for the purples. This is the 93-95 home shirt of Slovenian Prva League side NK Maribor. The purples play at the 12,702 capacity Stadion Ljudski Vrt in the city of Maribor in the northeast of Slovenia, which is part of the former Yugoslavian state, of course. Maribor are one of only three Slovenian sides that have played in the top flight in Yugoslav football before the breakup of Yugoslavia in 1991. Since then, they won the Slovenian League 14 times and have secured 13 cup final wins during that time. And they even won the Intertoto Cup in 2006. Current manager is Darko Milanic, and he holds the record of being the first ever non-British or Irish manager of Leeds. And he just lasted 32 days in charge of the Peacocks, says Phil.
It's longer than most.
Yeah. Current striker Marcos Tavares holds the club record for most appearances, 474, and most goals, 185 so far. He couldn't find any decent links to football in the UK, and then we went and signed one of their players.
Well, we just signed with someone from Mirabal.
Yeah. So he said, it says here, former Mirabal midfielder Rene Mihalic played alongside our very own Inigo Calderon for Chennaiyin last season. But then in January 2019, Brighton signed Mirabal striker Jan Malarca on a 3.5-year deal.
That takes us quite nicely into what you wanted to talk about next, didn't it?
Which is the January transfer window.
Been kind of interesting, hasn't it?
There's not been any headline players, but I mean,
First team stuff.
No, I mean, we seem to be signing an awful lot of players for the development squad. I mean, it's going to be, I mean, very, very interesting if what happens on the 29th of March happens, which we don't talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Because all these players are obviously non-British,
I think they can apply for residential status, so I think that kind of thing is in hand. I mean, if all people that's going to sort that sort of thing out would be, you know, an international organisation like the Premier League or the FA would sort that out, so you'd like to think so.
But it's been the players that we have signed on the deadline window on there was they've all been loaned back to their current clubs, as has the one that came in earlier, which is so the ins thus far are Alexis McAllister, mm-hmm. who's gone back to Argentina's juniors, Chudia Christian Baluta, who's gone back to FC Vitoru, and Yamalaka's gone back to Maribor.
Are we trying to rival Chelsea in having...
We've got 23 players out on loan at the moment.
Well, Chelsea have got 22 the last time I looked.
It's
wow.
I thought they had 40 players out on loan.
Well, that's on... I'm going by Soccer Base.
Right.
Who may have not have got all of them. Maybe there wasn't room on the page for all
that. I doubt somehow that our wage bill is anything like a Chelsea.
Other notable exitees this window have been Oliver Norwood, who's signed permanently for Sheffield United. Marcus Sutton has gone to Fortuna Dusseldorf.
Is that on loan?
It is on loan. Yeah. Ezequiel Scalotto has gone to Chievo. Yeah. And then those two there. We've also lost Jordan Maguire-Drew, who's been signed for Orient. Ben White's gone to Peterborough on loan. Joe Tomlinson's gone to Bognor on loan. Ben Barkley, Notts County. George Cox, Northampton. Josh Kerr, Derry. Tom McGill, Basingstoke. James Tilly, Cork. Billy Arce.
Silly Arce, you mean?
He's gone to Club Sport in Emelec.
Yeah.
Andrea, who is one that he is rated very highly, he's gone to St Mirren, of all places.
Yep.
Matthias Norman to Rostov, and Stefan Lubicic has gone to Eastbourne Borough. And then the big one,
your great shining hope.
Yeah.
Aaron Connolly's gone to Luton.
Well, that's a good move for him.
It's a very good move, actually. I mean,
That's on loan, isn't
it? That's on loan, yeah. He's just signed a new 3.5-year deal yesterday as well, and then gone straight out on loan to Luton once he's fit again. So,
well, what you're looking at here is, and it's just a post that we had from our friend Marcus, who was on the show last week and is on probably every 6 weeks, Adam Virgo, who you coming back ever.
Spoke to him this week.
All right, it's about time, yeah. Is that we're making these investments for the future. Now, obviously, not all of this lot are going to come through. But what they are doing is they're going out and obviously they're playing regular football. Now, how many of them are going to make the grade at the Albion is one thing. But what we're doing is we're kind of making ourselves a little bit future-proof. If we do go down, and it is an almighty if, you know, some of these players might actually be considered, you know, championship-quality players. I know we shouldn't be talking about it in those terms. But we are trying to make ourselves a little bit more future-proof. And then when you consider the likes of, and this is the point that Marcus made, and I think it was a very adroit point, was that they're signing Peter Crouch, who's 38. Burnley are signing Peter Crouch, who's 38. That's not sort of thinking of your future. That's about a panic buy to make sure you stay in the Premier League.
I think another thing with this sort of signing is quite often you see, particularly in the Premier League, it's like, you know, it's more about how much money you spend on someone. You look at sort of the money that Chelsea would have spent on Alvaro Morata. Mm-hmm. It's just clearly a waste of time. You see quite a lot of the money that teams like Everton have spent, like, you know, £30 million on people we've never heard of that just turned out to be failures and stuff. And I think what we've done with these players, particularly the lad from Maribor, he's scoring goals for them this season, and you're looking to pick players from, okay, unglamorous league, but it's from the best team in that league.
Yeah.
And he's playing at a high level for them. They've played Champions League and Europa League football. Also with the 19-year-olds from Romania, a really interesting team. I was just having a read up about them today. It's basically sort of like George Hagi's like youth academy.
Tristan Baluta.
Yeah, and they've they've sort of come from nowhere. He took over this team and basically turned it into like a sort of a home for young players. The average age, I think, is 22.
All right.
And they started off in the third division in Romania and then worked their way up to become Romanian champions. They lasted until like the third qualifying round, I think, of the Champions League before finally going out to APOEL.
Hell of a dose of experience they're getting then, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, so they won their first leg 1-0, and sadly they lost 4-0 in the second leg.
Sure.
To not progress. But really, just an incredible story. And you just think, well, Hagi's just such a world great.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an iconic player.
So we're getting, obviously they'll be looking to cash in on their players to, help build that team up. Mm. But someone is obviously being taught by, a really great footballer. And they're going to go back and they're going to spend the rest of the season hopefully getting better as players with an incentive now that they've got a club.
Absolutely.
In England. And, and sometimes it's about, you have to unearth the gems that people aren't looking at.
Well, look,
particularly
at
if you're Brighton and Hove Albion.
For instance, Pascal Gross, etc.
Yeah. I was about to say, Pascal Gross, Andoni, has done very well. He'd done very well at his club. We're pecking the players. I mean, he hasn't pulled up the trees for us yet, but Ali Jay, his stats in the Netherlands were really, really good. Mm. And these players that, I think Andy's point is right. There seems to be this obsession almost that you must spend, there must be a marquee signing, there must be the big name, there must be the sort of like the drama behind it, because all the marketing and all the rights and everything that helped to sort of repay that. But with us, we're actually looking at building actually a proper academy, proper future.
But for that, there's also got to be a pathway for these players. Now, we're starting to see a little bit more of Victor Gyökeres at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And I suspect, if you're getting back to the point we're making earlier, I suspect we'll see him play against West Brom again. I really do.
Well, I mean, when he did come on, he had that fantastic
Absolutely,
chance.
And then,
less said about the header that he missed, even though he was offside, he still missed, which was worrying.
Yeah.
But he's won against Bayern Munich midweek, and that game was mental. The Bayern fans brought their own bowling equipment, it seems.
Well, I jumped off. I live in Lansing. I jumped off the train, and it was a very, very cold night. We're talking sort of like, I think, Wednesday night, and you could see the lights burning at the training ground. So I'm walking from the station. For those that don't know, the training ground, you go north from Lansing Station to the tune of about a third of the mile, and then there's a kind of a turning off this anonymous close. Called Mashburn Lane. You just sort of turn off into that, and at the end of that, you've got the training ground and what have you. Now, so it's north of the railway line. In fact, it butts onto the railway line. So I'm going south railway line, but parallel to it. And you can hear this noise reverberating around the town. And I just assumed it was Bayern and Brighton fans making a noise, because you could hear it in German and English. And it wasn't. It was Bayern fans all the way.
It was mental. And going back to my original point, was that Gyökeres was really brilliant in that game. And
yes.
It's a game we lost eventually. But
it was not as though we were battered.
No, but unfortunately no longer in their competition. But he's one that's coming through. And we are giving these players opportunities to go out on loan and play against men, is the way they're looking.
Also, with the Connolly loan, he's going to a team that is competing for a league title.
Mm.
Not just promotion, but a league title. So he's going to be once he recovers from injury, he is going to be exposed to a high level of competition. A, he's got to work his way into that team,
mm-hmm.
and B, he'll be under pressure to perform, because the stakes are very high for them. So it's just what he needs, and it hopefully will be good for him.
And just as a side note to that story, he's also going to a team where a certain ex-Brighton number 25 has rediscovered his mojo and has been their man of the match for the last three games in a row.
Zora?
No. Kazinga Lualua.
All right, do you reckon he's going to be heading to Stoke sometime soon?
Well, Nathan was the one that signed him, but I'm glad to see that he's rediscovered his mojo and he's finding that form.
Good old Kaz.
He's a player that I will always appreciate, and he's one of my favourites of all time. I've always had a soft spot for.
You could sit your watch by him, couldn't you? 62 minutes, on comes Loire Loire.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was absolutely box office for us, wasn't he? I mean, every time he got the ball, you felt that something exciting could happen, and it often flattered to see. We all know him. It was like very slow, slow, quick, quick, slow. But
you know, we've also had upgrades on him as well. And don't get me wrong, you're absolutely right. You know, you go back to the third, you know, that particular season, that 2011 season, where he was such a major influence on it. But you know full well that as we've grown, he hasn't. And, you know, when we got promoted in 2017, Knockhart was the kind of the natural successor. Mm. He hasn't grown as much as he could or should have done for reasons various. So we're looking for that next sort of box office player, really, aren't we?
I mean, I remember watching Loire Loire play against Chelsea and creating the equaliser for Newcastle. This was a few years back. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if only he could have done that every week consistently, well, he wouldn't have been playing for Brighton.
Well exactly, he had that like kind of like almost telepathic relationship with Vicente as well, which was wonderful to watch at the time.
But absolutely.
Then, both of them were both in and out of the team and very rarely got to play together, really. But,
just yeah. A quick word on the transfer. Well, Newcastle have bought someone, haven't they? He's from North America?
He's Paraguayan, but he's
he's a Paraguayan international, but
he's the MLS's MVP.
Yeah, right.
I just wonder how he's going to adapt quickly. So having seen some of the players that we've signed have turned into really, really good footballers, how he's going to adapt in time to save Newcastle.
You reckon Newcastle full of the drop?
I think they're very, very close to it. That's their one signing, isn't it? £21 million.
Two actually. They picked up two players, but it was I can't tell you exactly what they're doing.
To be honest, I don't care as long as they go down. You know.
But I think he's a very, very good player. You know, Atlanta, who they've just signed him from, just won the MLS as well, and he was their best player. And you know that league's getting better and better and better at the moment. So. You know, who knows? I actually did see that Liam Ridgewell, who's come back from the MLS, has just gone to Hull again, but that's another story. Mm. But
sure.
Okay, we're playing Watford today, and I caught up with Andy Lewis from the Hornets Nest website and co-host of the Watford Fan Show a little bit earlier on.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us here on the Albion Roar. Now, how's your season gone so far? It looks okay, sitting ninth, 33 points. That's pretty safe.
Yeah, it's not too shabby, really. I don't think any Watford fan can have any cause for complaints. I think before the season started, there was almost sort of a split in the fan base. Some fans thinking, you know, we're going to be looking over our shoulder this season. Some fans thinking that, you know, we'll be okay just to about scrape mid-table. But actually, it's emerged at the start of February that we're almost challenging for that seventh spot, that final Europa League place. So I think
the Everton Cup, as it's known.
The Everton Cup, yeah, it's been a fantastic season so far, but we're just hoping that obviously in the last sort of three seasons, once we've hit that 40-point mark, we've kind of tailed off. So hopefully now we've kind of got something to play for that we continue. But even if we don't get that seventh spot, I think a top half finish should be within our reach. Yeah. And I don't think any Watford fan can have any complaints about a top half finish this season?
I mean, you are displaying classic mid-table form, aren't you? I mean, the last five, it's like drawn, drawn, won, drawn, lost. It's, although you've only actually drawn six games this year, I thought it was actually going to be more than that when I was looking at the table earlier. But so a successful season for you would be top half of the table. But I mean, you're also still in the FA Cup, and yeah, let's face it, you've got 33 points at the moment. Safety could be as low as 35 points this year, so you've got to take it seriously, right?
I think we do, and I think I would say, to be honest, we're probably safe at the moment. I think there's more than three teams worse than Watford this season, so I think the FA Cup, you know, in our trophy cabinet is quite empty, so it would be really nice to put a bit of silverware in there. But I think the draw's been fairly kind to us, so we've got another away tie against either Portsmouth or QPR in the fifth round. Obviously, Chelsea and Manchester United are going to be knocked out. So that's another one of the big boys gone. So if you avoid Manchester City like the plague, then there's a very, very good chance of Watford reaching the semi-finals and possibly the final. It's not with not it's within our reach this season.
We've seen this week, Man City go win to Newcastle. They were 1-0 up after 24 seconds, and they lost to Newcastle. I mean, even we didn't lose to Newcastle. I mean, they are beatable. It seems
they are beatable, and that's what's great. You know, that Newcastle victory, the Palace victory at the Etihad, is sort of giving us, the clubs like Watford and Brighton a bit of hope when they come up against Man City. You know, Leicester drawing against Liverpool, we're reminded that these teams they're not invincible. And so, you know, Liverpool are out of the cup. City are beatable. There's a very, very good chance of Watford doing something in the FA Cup this season. I just hope that we turn up in the fifth. I hope the squad and the manager realises that this is such a good opportunity to try and win a cup, our first ever cup. And I just hope we go all guns blazing for it.
Yeah, I mean, in the pantheon of football as a whole, I mean, I personally see Watford as a very similar side to ourselves here in Brighton, as in being very much embedded within its community. Its fan base is pretty. It's very much of its area. It's from its fan base, from its surrounding areas. Going forward, I mean, largely don't get seen by the mainstream media. There's a lot of myopia going on in regards to what we do and who we are.
Yeah, there is. And it's, I think this season especially, I think the media are sort of cottoning on to Watford and a couple of the clubs outside the big six. But a lot of the times we'll be watching Match of the Day or listening to 606, and the majority of coverage, certainly from my perspective anyway, is that it's focused around those bigger clubs, your Manchester United, your Spurs, Chelsea's, etc. Because that's what people want to watch. That's what people want to listen to. The analysis on Match of the Day, I find, whilst informative at times, it feels like it can be a bit biased. If Watford beat Arsenal, it's about how bad Arsenal were, and not
exactly. And this is exactly what happened to yourselves when you beat Spurs earlier in the season as well. It was about how Spurs not lost, not how Watford won.
Exactly, and it's just quite frustrating to at times not feel like the clubs our size get the recognition that we perhaps deserve from the mainstream media, because it's probably not cool to be a Brighton fan. It's not cool to be a Watford fan. But we're very, very proud of it, and it's something that does irk me a little bit.
I mean, it is like a badge of honour from supporting your local team, though, isn't it? I mean, it's not like, I mean, you've got the Man Uniteds, the Liverpools, the Arsenals. You know, they've got an army of supporters from all over the world, and I guess that's what the mainstream media panders to. But I mean, we've got a success story going on with our club, but you've probably got exactly the same with yours, because of the very nature of the Premier League. We've got a worldwide audience. We've got people coming over from America, from Japan, from all over the world, because they've become Brighton fans.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. But that's what you don't hear about that. Like, look at Bournemouth. Arguably going through their sort of golden age in their entire history, rising up from League Two up into the Premier League, a bit similar to us, what we did under Taylor in the 70s and 80s. Mm. Bournemouth, it's their golden era almost, and they're still
the,
sort the, of
the viewpoint from this side of the coast is very, very different of Bournemouth. Trust me.
I can imagine, but it's almost...
It's not a derby, by the way. Did you know, again, we're talking about the mainstream media again, and this is something which really irks us. Every time we play Bournemouth, it's a South Coast derby. Did you know that Watford is actually closer than Brighton than Bournemouth is?
Is it?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. So it's...
I would not have thought that.
So it's the bees... It's the Flying Things Derby. That's what we call it, the Flying Things Derby.
What do you guys refer to your derby with Crystal Palace as? Is it the M23 Derby? Is that the official name?
No, it's Palace.
It's
a Palace.
It's
a derby. It's a game against Palace. It's not. It is our big rivalry, but we don't actually have a name for it. No, it's a game against that burning smell up the road.
And you must get
sick of being asked why Palace as a Brighton fan.
That happens on a regular basis, but we digress. Anyway, how do Watford fans view the game this coming weekend?
I think we understand that it's going to be very, very difficult. Brighton are a very good side at home. Sort of like us in our after we got promoted, you need that good home form if you want to survive in the Premier League when you come up, you know, first and second season. And I think Chris Hughton's managed to do that, and he's done it very well. You know, the likes of, I think, United went there earlier this season and lost. It's not easy for clubs to go to Brighton and get some points, so it's going to be tricky. Our away form is actually pretty good. Obviously, we lost at Spurs on Wednesday night, and that was quite a frustrating result, but I think that was our first loss away from home in our last five league games. So I think we're coming into it with a bit of confidence. We want to bounce back after the defeat on Wednesday night. We're still going to be without Abdoulaye Doucouré, which is
a massive miss for you. I mean, he was absolutely brilliant against us first game of the season. I mean, we were as bad as we could possibly be in that game. Coming out of Vicarage Road on opening day, we were very, very worried for the state of our season after that, because we were that bad. But then we went and beat Man United in the next game. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. But it's your midfield. It's very big, very strong. So if Doucouré is not playing, who plays in that role?
So it will... Capu will definitely start, and he's likely to start alongside Tom Cleverley, who started on Wednesday night against Spurs. If not Tom, then it's probably going to be Domingos Quina, sort of young wonder kid who we pinched off West Ham for £1 million before the season started. He's looked fantastic in the games that we've seen him, and certainly a prospect for the future. And whilst Doucouré's injured, it's a great chance for either Cleverley, Keane, or even Chalobah to stake a claim for that starting spot. Because our midfield is arguably, it's certainly the strongest area we've got on the pitch, and arguably one of the best midfields outside the top six.
Chalobah's a bit of a forgotten man, isn't he?
I feel really sorry for him, because he had a really nasty injury last season, and he was out for about 9 months of the season. Came back last game of last season, has played a few times, certainly played in the cups this season. But when we've seen him, he's almost been quite tentative and afraid, almost
protecting an injury.
When he came back for his first start, it was away at Southampton, and that was when they were. When they were scrapping for their lives, Southampton, before they had the new manager in. And it was just the wrong game to bring him back in. It was too physical for him. He didn't want to commit to any challenges. He didn't want to jump in and win the ball. And so we were almost playing with 10 men for that game, just because we just missed Chalobah in the middle. With such a shame, because before the injury, he was fantastic. Partnering up with Doucouré, and we saw him when he was on loan with us back in 2012-13 under Zola. He had a lot of promise, and he still does. He's England international now, but he needs a lot of game time. There was talk of him going out on loan to Aston Villa during this window. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him go on loan somewhere for the rest of the season.
Won't happen now. Window shut. But we're gonna have to leave it there, Andy. So thank you very much for joining us.
When you're ready.
That was Andy Lewis from the Hornet's Nest, and they made some great points there about the stairway to seventh, as it were, the league's myopia in teams below that.
Are we talking about the fact that basically, well, I mean, what we're effectively talking about here is the media's obsession with the circus that you have around the top six. And we discussed this last week about Match of the Day sort of effectively ignoring us, or, you know, newspaper reports that don't mention us. So should we actually have this kind of hinterland of this sort of Premier Championship then, and us 14 teams, and those other six? They can either do something like disappear into Europe, where Europe isn't sort of like going to welcome them, or maybe just disappear up their own backsides in their own puddle of cash.
We don't want that. We want to be part of this circus, for want of a better phrase. But I mean, it's just very, very sad state of affairs. Where, I mean, it happened with Watford earlier in the season. They beat Spurs, and it was all about Spurs losing. It's like Newcastle beat Man City this week, and it's all about Man City losing. It seems to be this complete myopia to the teams below that level.
Yeah, and the Manchester United game is
both of them.
Point, because the Manchester United game a couple of weeks back, lose 2-0, and it's all about Manchester United. Mm-hmm. We didn't get a mention. Mm. There was not any discussion.
2-1,
Brian.
2-1. 2-1.
2-1. I do apologise.
They were hanging on.
We were so anonymous, we didn't even remember. You didn't even remember the fact we scored. That's how
it's
anonymous
it's Dean
we are.
Wilkins all over again.
It is, yeah. But yes. But the point is, you know, we have to say last year, when we played them and beat them twice, it was about how poor Man United were and all the circus around, you know, Mourinho losing the dressing room and stuff like that. You know, hello, we won the game. It's not just Man U lost it. And so, you know, the Watford fan, and I'm sure that probably all of the rest of them, I'd imagine that anyone who's involved in the Bournemouth podcasts is knowing full well that it's all about Chelsea getting stuff 4-0.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. But unfortunately, we put this off for long enough, guys. The elephant in the room was the visit to Craven Cottage.
I'm not that big, mate, thanks.
Boom tish.
Well, there was some good news to come out of it, because I did spot... But I could have bought a ticket next to the away end for £50, which I thought was strong in it a bit for Fulham against Brighton, so I decided not to travel up there and get soaking wet.
Andy, on the other hand.
Yeah, I went. It was...
It was a hideous night on the
Thames. It was just thoroughly miserable. The start we had was absolutely perfect. It's just what you want. You get the early goal against a team that's low on confidence and with an utterly dreadful defence. And you just thought, yeah, we can actually go. And when we went 2-0 up, I just thought, blimey, this could be over very quickly. And to be honest, it should have been over very quickly. Murray could have had 4 in the first half. Proper was unlucky. He's getting closer to the goal.
Is now he ever going to score?
He's 6 inches away from the next shot. I've got to be at least being on target.
Proper is probably the only one of that team that probably came out that evening with any credit. I don't think he had a particularly horrific game, and I can't think of anyone else who comes out with a great deal of credit.
I think Murray
sorry,
Proper, but it was a collective failure. Mm. I mean, throughout the entire side. You even got an inkling towards the end of the first half where Fulham had made the change after Stevens had basically rubbed out Schürrle and Kearney came on and they changed their shape and they suddenly had a bit more of the ball.
Well, this is the thing though, Andy, because it was we went 2-0 up. We'll talk about the goals in a minute, but Ranieri is a reactive manager. He saw something was going wrong and he changed it on 27 minutes. He took off Ream and he put on Kearney. So he took off a defender and put on a midfielder, and we didn't react to that.
No, we didn't, and especially in the second half. The second half, we didn't react at all to anything that they were doing. I mean, it was like, well, surely now you're going to do something different, or you're just going to continue to let them have all this space on the ball. And it was mystifying. I mean, to be honest, them, you know, as soon as they scored that first goal, and they, you know. It was a good strike from Chambers, but yeah, you know, I'd like to see him do it again.
Mm. but not against us.
But yeah. but it did go in, and it gave them the impetus. And what impressed me about Fulham was that they had played poorly in the first half. They were losing 2-0. They were like staring down the barrel, and they came out and they hadn't given up. Mm. They showed real fight, determination, and in the end, no little skill. I mean, they couldn't defend, so what did they do? They just attacked us for the whole time, so they didn't really have to do that much.
Defended on our 18-yard line, yeah, basically.
But when they got the second goal, I thought, that's it, you know. We're probably going to lose.
Let's talk about the key points in the game leading up to that then. And firstly, it was a return for Matt Ryan in goal. Wasn't really a surprise, but...
No. this stuff about keeping the shirt, it's not a policy that Chris Hughton has. I cannot understand, and I'm looking at the stuff afterwards, you know, when you read on social media, David Button didn't do anything to get dropped. Well, yes, we knew he was going to get dropped. Matt Ryan is the number one choice goalkeeper. So this thing about keeping the shirt is a nonsense. Hughton doesn't do that. Certainly not in, you know, in terms of his best team.
Okay. But and as Andy correctly said, it was a very, very bright start from us, and we found ourselves in front after 3 minutes, and it was all about that beautiful ball from Martin Montoya.
The unchallenged beautiful ball. I mean, this is the point about Andy's saying about Fulham's dreadful defence. He carried that about 30, 40 yards.
He picked out the ball in the halfway line, and he surged forward. His pinpoint cross found Glenn Murray, whose first time flick.
Well, it was a sniffer's goal. That's what Murray is there for. It was a sniffer's goal. I mean, it was his kind of game. And like you say, he could have had three or four goals. You know, he had the chance we were talking about that went wide, sort of straight. Oh, you know, not after he got his second one, it went six. There were two very similar chances. One went 6 inches inside the post. One went 6 inches outside the post. So this is that kind of night.
And yeah. There was also quite a few really good saves from Sergio Rico in the Fulham goal.
Yes, well, he made one from Murray when it was 2-0. Again, it's sort of like, you know, Murray was down, sort of going to ground to get that little flick in, and a good save from Rico. And then he had an exceptional save in the second half.
Would have made it 3-2 to us.
At 2-2. But that was really like the only bright spot for us in the second half.
Okay. I think a few people have been quick to write off Glenn Murray in recent weeks. And I think he just showed...
Say me included.
He showed on Tuesday night, that he still got it.
Absolutely.
He certainly
it was his kind of game, though. Yeah. It was his kind of game. I mean, that without a defence that was going to allow him that amount of time, it was his kind of game. Whereas, you know, when we've had, for instance, Andoni playing, you know, against Huddersfield, against Palace, that's his kind of game. But this was, you know, a Murray-type game.
It was just very frustrating. It was like Cyrus Christie, I thought, was flipping useless.
He is useless.
In the first half. You know, he just kept running the ball out. He kept running the ball out of play on the line. He was nowhere for any... He was nowhere for either of Murray's goals in the either for our chances that we had in the first half. But in the second half, he just became an absolute menace because he had the whole side of the pitch to himself.
Absolutely.
He was able to bring the ball up unchallenged. Our back four seemed to... go into the 18-yard box, which meant you had Lucardia and March, who just had acres of space to marshal. Do you commit, in which case the guy can just pass it inside and then get it back again because the back four have just got... I didn't understand.
But the point about this is that, and we've played against Man City and Liverpool and all the big teams, and actually we've been so resilient, and we've been sort of very defensive, disciplined, and what have you. And this stuff that, again, I'm reading on social media about Ranieri being a tactical genius or outthought Hughton. The point is these players know exactly what they should be doing. They don't need Hughton to micromanage every single movement or anything like that. When it comes to allaying what Fulham can throw at us, that lot didn't step up because, I mean, and you saw how it was going to be because you saw, for instance, and it's a rarity, just how poor Duffy and Dunk were. They were completely outfoxed because they were being moved about, but the people in front of them were not having a brilliant game. And we had March and Lucardia, who, like you say, you're saying they're looking a bit lost as to know what to do. They should know exactly what to do.
They have so many
different... I mean, let's put it this way. Man City are about as fluid as you can get. You can describe a car crash better than you can describe how Manchester City play, and yet we can defend against them. This particular evening, we did no such thing. They were running around.
At the end of the day, Al, I mean, the players that are out on the pitch, yes, they are culpable, but the manager's got to hold his hands up as well because they were changes that were glaringly obvious.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is those players knew exactly what they should have been doing,
The situation was, we were playing with half a player in those conditions after. We should have been playing with 10 players, basically, because Dale Stevens should have been sent off.
Yes, he should, but that's another matter entirely.
And in those conditions, he can't make the tackles which he would normally be making. And there should have been a change.
Anyone on a yellow card, what do you mean the tackles? I mean, if he's on a yellow card, then obviously they have to be careful. careful. But if you're talking about the tackles, the ones where he goes flying in, and like you say, it should have been a red card.
The midfield was getting overrun, and basically...
Yeah. I mean, the back four had retreated. It allowed their five in midfield to basically have the freedom of the pitch. You know, in defence of our wide players, Sicardi and March, they basically had acres of space to cover because they couldn't really commit because it didn't even matter if they did because the Fulham players had so much space and so many options because nobody else was coming to pressure them. Every time we got the ball in the second half, Fulham were on us like a rash. They pressed us. We were not pressing them, because half the team was like miles away from where the ball was. We weren't attacking.
Therein lies your point. You're saying we weren't closing down like we should have been, and yet this lot know exactly. I mean, we're the masters in the Premier League of doing that.
I think we were playing to a pattern, and I, as much as I love Chris Hughton and he is absolutely brilliant, I think he is not immune.
From the criticism from that evening.
He's taken us as far as we can go.
No, that is twaddle.
No one in this room is saying that.
But we're reacting to things that we've been talking about here.
Before I let Lebo speak. kick me off now. But it was, they were all to blame. You know, it was a collective failure. Sometimes that's what happens. Mm. We had a brain freeze and we didn't turn up in that second half and everyone's responsible for it. And in many ways, if you're going to lose, at least lose
it. Get stuffed outside.
Lose in that fashion, which means you cannot escape the responsibility. You can't point at what I know some people have tried to point at individual players, which I found absolutely ludicrous because they were all terrible. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just one player's fault. It was a collective failure across the pitch. And I sorry to say, in the dugout as well. But that is not what we're normally like. We are much better than that, and we need to return to our good form.
Well, I think people are quick to blame Chris Hughton for that result and not changing tactics, but outmaneuvered by Ranieri, won the Premier League with a bunch of no-hopers. If we go back to the home game against Fulham, tables were turned. Southampton away, 2-0 down, hopeless. Lost cause? No.
Absolutely.
Because he knew what he... Listen, I won't hear criticism of Chris Hughton. No other manager has ever got us as far as he has. As far as I'm concerned, the man, I wouldn't say he can do no wrong, but he is the man for the job.
Well, that's exactly what we're saying, Lever. I mean, he's not beyond criticism, but
we're not talking about in this room, of course not, but we do have to actually answer the charge from not just the team itself, but also of our fellow supporters, including those who say, Hughton's taken us as far as he can. Is it time to look for someone else? And then,
it's sort of rubbish.
Of course, those people need to know
who they're supporting.
Shall we get Mourinho in and then we can bore the pants
no,
off?
No, let's have Allardyce.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
we're Brighton and Hove Albion. We don't know how we can push up maybe as far
in
as...
In fairness, Big Sam would not let that 2-0 lead slip.
No, we wouldn't have got 2-0 lead in the first place. No,
and on that note, we're going to leave the Fulham game. We lost. We move on. We draw a line.
You'd like to think those players are going to be professional enough to know just how poor they were and actually would therefore react to it appropriately.
I think they will. And one thing we will be seeing a reaction from is the various amounts of quiz teams that are coming up in the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund quiz out.
We certainly would hope so. Yes, Friday the 15th of March, which we now know is either going to be the night before the Derby County game or it's going to be before the home game against Cardiff City. Are they at the Cup?
Yes.
They are at the Cup. So
yeah, they got beaten by Gillingham.
Yes, they did. Yes, so one of the other. Anyway, Friday the 15th of March in the Mayo Wynn Baxter Lounge. That's the big one in the West Stand. Teams of up to six are welcome. £5 per person to enter. If you want to know more details, alan.wares@ntlworld.com. It's just basically to let me know that you're coming. I need to let Sodexo and the club know that you're coming. So just please... drop me an email to say, I want to book a team. It'd be great to see you. It'd be great to fill the room and raise a stinking pile of cash for the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, which would be brilliant. Friday the 15th of March, the 9th annual Robert Eaton Memorial Fund quiz. Mayor win Baxter Lounge, West Stand, American Express, Community Stadium, Falmer, Brighton, the world.
That's it. That's all we've got time for. So, of course, thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you to Simon Levinson. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Aidy Packham.
Wiltshire Hall!